I really love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
Hit him with the hype.
Alex.
He broke 6,000 guitars. Never drew a dime.
And Dave.
Leave the memories alone. I don't want to say.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
Yes, if you couldn't tell from that intro, that little song.
Dave died.
No, it's not as grim as that, but Dave decided to take some time off, take a little sabbatical. So he's going to be taking some time off for the foreseeable future. But just like all things I'm sure before we've had before in the past with either you stepping away or him stepping away, he's going to come back probably.
And yeah, he didn't fight with you like last time.
Mm.
So nothing bad happened, folks.
Yeah, he said, and honestly, he's got a point here. Because we review comic books, and with that comes reading a lot of bad books. And I understand with him and his busy schedule, like he's making more than either of us. So he's got a busy job, so the idea of him reading a bunch of books that aren't necessarily good, I can understand why he may be getting a little burnt out.
What I put it on was Marvel took the notes, and for regular listeners, you'll notice that Marvel's notes are kind of detailed,
mm-hmm.
and he reads through them on the show, and sometimes it takes him a long time to read. So if we do 22 books, then he wrote fucking 22 books worth of notes. And that is fucking work.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a pain in the ass. He didn't tell me that. He just said he needed to step away for a while, but.
But he's openly already told me. He's all, I'm keeping the door open. Maybe if we're reading a really big book and he wants to talk about it, he'll come right back on the air. So it's one of these things to where he's just going to take some time off, but it's not really him leaving permanently.
Yeah, we're not going to bury him or anything.
I had something to go, but I decided to call an audible. You know what it is, Alex, right?
Yeah, and we didn't have any news. I was going to say in news, the Ryback is no longer under contract, and he's taking bookings at bookthebigguy@yahoo.com.
We should book him.
I don't think that fits. I'm not going to fucking pay the Ryback for an interview.
Oh, he's the Ryback. Do they own the Ryback?
Well, they own Ryback, no. So. He could just be fucking Ryan Reeves, or he could be the Silverback.
He could be the Ryback, R-I-B-A-C-K.
I don't know if you could actually, can you do that?
Remember they owned Eddie Guerrero, so when he was on the indie scene, he was E-D-D-Y Guerrero.
I can't believe that fucking works, but okay.
Wackier things have worked, dude.
He can replace Moose in ROH, except Ooh. He's not as athletic.
No. He's Jack, though.
Yeah, he is.
All right, I think with that out of the way, let's go into this week's books. That's a boss song.
Quarter up, bitches. We got a lot of fucking books to go.
Yes.
And just like in the old arcade days, I will fucking beat you and make your girlfriend cry.
Ooh, nice. With your penis?
With my fucking Elite 10 playing skills, dude. If this fucking job ever officially starts, I'm buying Street Fighter V.
Ooh,
I'm
nice.
I'm fucking dominate like I did when I was a kid.
Wait, how are you going to play that? On your PC, I assume?
No.
Ooh,
oh, yeah, I'll have to get it on the PC. I got a good gamepad.
Oh, there you go. Maybe I'll hit you up. All right, let's go over this week's books, which include Cinema Purgatorio 4, Aquaman 4, Batman 4, Green Arrow 4, Justice League 2, Nightwing 2, Superman 4, Art Ops 10, Sheriff of Babylon 9, Kill or Be Killed 1, Tokyo Ghost 9, Walking Dead 157, Kingpin 2, Doctor Strange 10, Moon Knight 5, Punisher 4, Squadron Supreme 10, and Uncanny Inhumans issue 12.
Let's yes.
All right, let's go into our first title, Cinema Purgatorio, Obviously, I'm going off of what's listed here on Comic List. It has writer Alan Moore and art by Kevin O'Neill.
It's the same creative teams every week. So for this book, we can actually skip that because it never changes.
Correct.
The same writers and the same artists on each story.
Mm-hmm.
So Cinema Purgatorio itself this week was this one was different. So what it was they're doing the before and after scenes more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed, because we're gonna find out, like, is he in hell? What's going on? Is he in purgatory? What's going on here? Why is he
maybe it is purgatory, considering the title of the story is Cinema Purgatorio.
That seems a bit obvious, but you know, whatever. This movie was basically King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was being told by the guy who created King Kong. However, the gorilla was like it was weird. It was drawn like it was the movie, but the gorilla was speaking in the creator's voice.
Yeah,
he
was telling his life story, basically. He was talking about what it was like to make the movie, the fact that he wanted to make a sequel, but the studio would never let him make a proper sequel. He talked about his personal life with his wife and his kids.
How it all went to shit, because all he cared about was his career.
Yeah.
And his wife went nuts.
Although there was a funny part of that story where she had like a terminal illness and she murdered the sons and she turned the gun herself. But by doing that, she cured herself of the disease, so she was able to live an extra year out of it.
Yeah, she had a fluid in her lungs, but she shot herself and the bullet went through the lungs. So it drained the fluid. So she lived for another year in fucking jail, I assume. But at this point in the film, our main character is like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Why are these movies off like this? And, you know, he sees the other thing to note is all the people in the real world are off somehow. Like the guy, I don't know if he's the owner of the theater or what, the guy who looks like Hitler.
Yeah.
They always mention how he's oily and he walks kind of fucked up. And then all the people who are in the theater, like there's something off about them. And there's a lady coming through selling ice cream. He couldn't find the ice cream he wanted, but he bought some and he notes that it tasted of nothing. It's like eating nothing.
This is creeping me out.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's like, oh, maybe I should leave before the next movie starts. But just then the next movie starts and he can't leave because he's got to watch it. That's how it ends. Building dread.
I love all these stories, but the Cinema Purgatorio one's always my favorite because it's stuff of dealing with movies, but then it's also with the story of this guy who may be in purgatory. But the movies are always cool and they reflect that.
So, yeah, this is consistently good. It's Alan Moore should have become a short story writer a long time ago, apparently, because he's very good at it. Then we had Code Brew, which I actually thought this was the strongest. This is the strongest issue since the regular comic one ended.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause this one just fucking made me laugh. It was a cop bringing in a mummy. And the mummy was like the dark one of the Shifting Sands. And he brought the mummy in to get rewrapped.
The Dark Destroyer, he refers himself as.
Yeah, the Dark Destroyer. And the Dark Destroyer is, you know, talking about how like, hey, you could help me out, but you can't go by Sal anymore. You gotta go by your full name. And he's like, why, what's wrong with Sal? What's wrong with Sal? He's like, it's a peasant's name. If you had the full name, you could wander the night with me. And then fucking Prue walks by and what was his name? The Dark Destroyer?
Yes.
He goes, man, what an ass on her.
So you should totally go after her.
And he's like, you should try to go after that. And he's like, what? And then Prue's buddy in the EMT team with him's like, hey, dude's checking you out.
My favorite part is when he brings up his mother. He's like, what'd you say? He's on nothing. Just pretend as though the Great Destroyer has said nothing.
Yeah, because he was like nagging him. He's like, God, you're worse than my mother. And the other EMT did have a little talk with Prue about like, you know, all this shit's going on and people don't really know about it. Well, why don't Like, what's the deal with that? And he explained that, you know, the governments of the world know about this, about the paranormals, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
She's not supposed to call them monsters.
What do they call them? Paranormal Americans?
Yeah, paranormal Americans. And said they have it better in America than in, say, China or Russia. But they don't have it very good, and they've talked many times about just making it public under the theory that what he said was, you know, people might be a little freaked out at first, but, like, this is America. Eventually, they'd just be another group of minorities,
mm-hmm.
and people would get used to it. He's like, because, you know, most of them are harmless. Like, they don't really do anything. It's not like they're really a threat. But, you know, it never ends up going through. So he just talked about that, and he's like, look at that. There's a fucking mummy sitting there. People don't know what it is. It could be a weirdo. It could be somebody whose fucking entire body is burned. Nobody's giving him a second look.
The dude's got a point there as far as, why not just introduce him to the public?
Yeah, well, but they don't do it. So there's that, and then that issue ended. And then we went to Modded, the Pokemon story.
Yeah.
And in this one, you know, because her Fluff Bumble, her Pokemon.
Fine name, by the way.
Yeah, had been captured. So she's like, we gotta go get it back, but we gotta take your dude to go get Modded, your replacement monster. And she takes her to these guys, and, she really wants to push her on the phallic cannon. Which is exactly what it sounds like, but she didn't like that, and then she eventually settles on a hat.
Aww.
And the other girl that's trading her is like, Jesus Christ, at least give him something functional. She's like, hey, you said modding is about what I want, and I want him to have a hat. And they have to go to the Abyss and enter a tournament to win back Fluff Bumble.
Because Pokemon.
Yeah.
Okay, our next story is A More Perfect Union by Max Brooks. This is a short story, just the union guys fighting against the giant ants. They get the idea to shoot the antenna so they can't see, so they're blind. I don't know why they didn't think of that earlier.
My only problem with that was the one thing with this is, I mean, they are huge fucking bugs, so maybe that's a little easier. But that antenna is a small target.
So the idea of them shooting at it, but then they mentioned in the backup that because of that era, that they often wouldn't, which is why the expression comes, they had to shoot them at very close range with the quote, don't shoot them till you see the white of their eyes.
No. They pointed out that wasn't the case in the Civil War.
Oh, okay.
That was the case in the Revolutionary War, and some similar rifles. Like in the Revolutionary War, it was all the muskets.
Mm-hmm.
In the Civil War, they'd started to develop more modern rifles, you could fire a little faster, and they were more accurate.
And they were better at long range.
Well, right, because, you know, those old fluckers, there was no accuracy at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was that, but, you know, so they're shooting at the bugs, and then the bugs get closer, so they put the bayonets on, and they start fucking stabbing them in the head. They don't seem particularly afraid of the giant bugs, and I suppose that's because they've been at war with them for some time.
Although I found it preposterous they're going toe-to-toe with them, considering they're ants, and ants have what kind of strength? 10 times proportional to their size?
Well, but still, they're stabbing them with
bayonets?
With sharp implements, in like they're... Yeah, an ant's skin isn't particularly strong.
That's true, they're also... I'll correct myself. They're stabbing them in the mouth. That's how they're able to kill them.
Yeah, because they have big mouths, and they have to, he said, you stab them through the jaw and up into the brain. So, but they did a good job killing them.
And that one and, guy's, yeah. That one guy's experimental bullet worked. There was the two bullets tied together with the fishing line.
Yeah, that was hilarious. And he's like, oh my God, it worked. And he's like, yeah, now we just need enough bullets for like 500 more guys. Good job. Because he only made the one.
Hey, he wanted to implement them, but the captain was all, no, we can't use experimental weapons when we're dealing in war.
Well, yeah, they didn't have enough time either to make them.
And like you said, he wasn't 100% sure it was going to work either.
Yeah, but it did, so good on him.
Okay, in our final story, we had The Vast by Chris Stone Cage.
So in this one, the little monster is still following him, and she pointed out that, like, hey, they told us to capture baby monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So since this thing's following us, maybe we should bring it with us. and they're walking through, and then I guess they go outside what used to be like a zoo. Well, from what I could identify, there was a tiger monster, a giraffe monster, and I'm not sure what the other one was. And they're like, well, they're not moving. Do we shoot them? And then they start moving a little bit, and he's like, all right, fire. But there's a dude riding on one of their backs, and he goes, hold their fire. They're on our side. So apparently some of these monsters that are created are still friendly, or they don't like the monsters. I'm not sure what's going on there because, you know, even in normal times, like a tiger's not really going to team up with a person.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're not going to actively try to kill a human either.
If you think? You fucking jump in a lion pit tomorrow? You think it's not going to fucking kill you?
Eh, I say I got a 50-50 shot.
I'm pretty sure it'll fucking murder you, dude.
If the tiger had just eaten...
It had just eaten, you'd be all right.
But. And that's what happened in the one case with the little baby monster. They just fed it.
Well, we don't know what's going on with the baby monster.
Yeah,
they didn't have a chance to feed these things, and they were fucking massive. So.
And they brought up my point from last time. It's like they're not quite entirely sure if the monster's going to eat them or not. It's following them, and it's cool, but they don't know if they're waiting for another meal. They're just waiting them to lower their guard so they can eat them.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was that. There's another good issue of this book. That this book's the same as it ever is. I mean, you know, due to the fact the stories are so short, if you don't particularly like them, it's over in like five pages. And if you do like them,
isn't
you want to read
say,
the next one.
Isn't what they say about the weather in Seattle? Just wait 5 minutes and it'll change.
Do they? I don't know.
There's an expression for some American city. I forget what it is. I'm just saying Seattle just because I'm pulling that off the top of my head. But
doesn't it rain all the time in Seattle?
Well, I don't know if that's the one I'm referring to, though. Whatever. So that was from Avatar Press. We had another title that we teased that we were going to read from Avatar Press, Providence, but we weren't able to locate a copy. Apparently that got postponed.
That's because it doesn't come out until next week.
Yeah, but they teased it on Comic List, but I guess they were off on that one. Okay, so moving on to DC, we have Aquaman Issue 4, writer Dan Abnett, art by Felipe Brones.
Aquaman
The Drowning Part 4.
Huh?
So The Drowning Part 4.
Yeah, so in this one, there was a really funny part early on in this. So Aquaman allowed himself to be arrested because Atlantean terrorists.
He wanted to prove there was no connection between him and the Atlantean terrorists. He's like, you know what? I'll turn myself in. I'll show you that I'm not in charge. I'll have myself in this cell, and the fact that they're still attacking. He even brings up the fact, he's like, you guys have Americans. You guys don't have, like, you know, terrorist cells or someone randomly gets a gun and starts shooting upon innocent people, or you guys don't have, like, the KKK, so it's like, it's the same thing, it's the same equivalent.
Yeah. Well, he also pointed out that Black Manta is not an Atlantean citizen. He's a citizen of the United States. So, yeah, but there was a funny part here, and it was actually good writing, in that they're asking Aquaman if he needs anything, and they're like, well, do you need, like, water? And he goes, if I get thirsty... And he's like, no, I mean, do you need yourself flooded? And he's like, oh yeah, I need some fish too. Maybe
a
turbo if you got one so I can talk to it. And if I don't hear whale songs every 4 hours, I go berserk. And the guy is like, and he's like, Jesus, you people know absolutely nothing about me. And they don't, and that's, you know, that's a part of the war. Mm-hmm. Now, there were a couple things going on in the meanwhile. One of them was Mara was meeting with the president's chief of staff, who dressed her down and talked to her like she was a fucking child. And he's like, Atlantis has only been on the world stage for like a few months now. You guys don't know anything. And right now your people are attacking a United States vessel, because like an aircraft carrier was sunk by Nemo, who have a name, by the way. Nemo, we found out they're an old organization that they claim they control the waters of the world, and their plan was, by controlling the waters of the world, they would then be able to control the world. Now, fair enough, this probably made a lot of sense when they were founded, before fucking air travel existed.
Well, but to what degree do they have air travel? It's not like anyone could survive living in the air for very long.
No, that's not what I mean. It's just, you know, at one point, the only way to travel between continents was via boat. And now we have fucking planes, and they said they were a really old organization, so. However, if you attack from the water, there still is a lot of shipping done via water, and theoretically you can't attack the coasts of any country.
You could still cripple a nation by stopping them from importing stuff, so.
You could. But, you know, whatever. So that's Nemo, they're bad guys. Mara gets very upset, hearing all this, and she never ordered an attack on this thing. What was actually going on was they went to investigate the downed aircraft carrier or battleship, whatever the fuck. It was a battleship. They went to investigate this and, they found, Atlantean sword, like a sword of the Atlantean royalty. And he goes, the guy's like, okay, this is total bullshit now because no Atlantean would leave this sword behind. This was left here on purpose to make it look like we did it. But just at that moment, the Americans show up. They find the Atlantean army around a sunken United States military vessel.
Oops.
So they automatically assume that they were behind it, which is a reasonable assumption. So military attacks the Atlanteans, so the Atlanteans are now attacking the military. Knowing this, Mara goes and breaks Aquaman out of jail.
Yeah, Aquaman has no idea what's going on. He's like, what's the deal? I'm trying to do something here, and you're not helping when you knock out all these guards or break me out of my cell.
And the thing is, he pointed out to the guards, like, they had him cuffed, and they offered to take the cuffs off, and he's like, I could get these cuffs off anytime I want. He's like, I could break them in half, but I'm going to leave them on as, like, a gesture of trust. Just to let, he's like, I want you to know I could break these at any time, but I'm leaving them on. Now, Mara fucked this up by fucking breaking him out of jail, but the thing is, the United States clearly doesn't fucking trust him anyway.
Well, but there was even portions of this when Aquaman found out what was going on. He's like, oh, I know exactly what's going on. If you guys would just let me leave, I could leave if I wanted to, but I want your guys' permission. I need to go and take care of this because I'm of royal blood. I'm the only one who can hash this out.
Well, the terrorists, the Atlantean terrorists, I think they're called the Deluge, he thought he had stopped them, but apparently he hasn't. So now the thing of it is, he probably did stop them, and this is all Nemo doing it, because if they're going to control the waters, they obviously have to remove Atlantis from the table, and maybe their goal is to start a war between Atlantis and the United States, so then they can hurt each other, and then they will be in a stronger position.
So,
but Aquaman is not aware of the existence of this group, and neither is anybody else.
So yeah, Aquaman, solid read.
Yeah, I really like this issue.
All right.
It was good.
From here, we are moving on to Batman issue 4, writer Tom King, art by David Finch.
I just want to make mention, I thought this was a strong issue.
Very strong issue. In fact, I said, it's this whole series with Tom King starts slow out the gate, but it's really picking up steam awfully quick.
Yeah, and I read a couple of reviews online, and one of them at least, I think it was the Newsarama review, said that, you know, the story's been good so far, but this issue shows the weakness of the decompression in stories because it crawled and nothing happened. And I thought that was really odd because more happened in this issue.
Exactly, than any other issue so far.
Yeah, than in the first three combined. Because, well, found out. In this one, we found out that, we knew in the last issue that Psycho Pirate had mind controlled Gotham and Gotham Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he mind controlled them to kill the handlers that Amanda Waller had sent with Hugo Strange and Psycho Pirate. He had mind controlled them to kill the handlers. They sent like 28 guys and had Gotham and Gotham Girl kill them all. So Gotham is now, you know, Psycho Pirate,
Does he mess with people's emotions and make them see things that aren't there?
He can, like, he puts on the mask, and if he looks at you and he says, like, fear, then you will be afraid. If he says anger, you will be angry. He can't really do mind control, but he can change the way your mind functions.
Yeah, because he'll introduce fear into you, and from there you'll start drawing conclusions, and if you have some allies, maybe you'll turn on them because you won't be able to trust them because you'll be afraid of them.
Yeah, so Batman confronts Gotham, and it's like, hey, he killed a bunch of people, but, you know, I know what's going on, it's not your fault, it's Psycho Pirate, but hey, just come with me, everything will be fine. And Gotham got really mad about this, and he partially destroyed a bridge, and he was trying to fix the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he destroyed part of the bridge and threw a steel girder through the Batmobile, which led to a funny moment where where Batman was like, or Arthur's like, hey, you want us to send this information to the Batmobile? And he's like, no, I don't want you to send it to the Batmobile.
not right now. Now is a bad time.
Yeah, so he then tracks him further to Gotham's parents' house where they have been murdered. Because Psycho Pirate Hugo Strange found out who his parents were.
Get a little closer to your receiver, homie. You're breaking up a little bit.
What?
So get a little closer to your receiver. You're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. He found out, or they found out where his parents were, and killed them. So now he's under the mind control and his parents are dead. Also, Gotham Girl is completely crippled with fear and can't do anything except kind of cry. Although Batman's little protege there, I thought, you know, he might be trying to hit that.
Good for him.
Maybe. I don't actually think I was supposed to read it that way because he was actually just comforting her.
No, I got that. I got that impression as well.
So well, that's because she's drawn like a hot chick and he's a young guy. But so you just automatically assume that,
well,
but
also
I'm not
the way
sure
he
was,
you know,
intended.
The way he was supporting her and the way he was looking at her, I got that impression as well.
He was probably looking at her because she's a piece of ass.
Also a little terrified because she probably ripped him like in half like a phone book.
Well, you know, whatever. That's all right. lots of dudes have slept with She-Hulk, so she's probably stronger. Yeah, but so Batman, also in this issue, he met with Amanda Waller and got the entire story about, you know, hey, since you came around, Gotham's been a shithole. You got the Joker, and then all this, and then the Owls, and then the Joker again, and then all these other fucking guys, and the city's gonna fucking destroy itself. So the government sent me in to clean it up, and I sent in Psycho Pirate, and I sent in Hugo Strange to manage Psycho Pirate. So that's what happened. He's like, yeah, now 28 of your people are dead. Good job, Amanda Waller.
See, I didn't know about this until researching this, but this felt like the last issue before they started the Night of the Monster Man.
Well, these first four issues have been building to that story. Like, the story is already ongoing.
Yeah, but I just did some research, and we're not getting that until issue 7, so.
Yeah, and I completely buried that story when we first talked about it, but it's turning out very nice.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was critical on. I'm like, you're going to give Tom King's the reins for Batman, and issue 7, you're already going to sort of force him to tell the story that he's not necessarily telling. He's co-writing it.
Yeah, but he's wrote all the lead-ins to it, so it's weird. It's a shame he's not getting to write it since he's done all the work on it. But, you know,
the powers
whatever.
That be, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our next book, Green Arrow, issue 4, writer Ben Percy, art by Juan Ferreira. Well, by the way, I need to put over Juan Ferreira again. This is the first time in a long time that I read this book, and I'm like, am I reading a DC book? Because the art is just absolutely amazing. Maybe not close to Rye, but it's, you know, it's
last reminiscent. Last issue looks like this, too.
And here's the thing, the art hasn't always looked like this, either. I'm not complaining, but I'm like, nope. I wish you'd kept this artist from issue 1.
But in the last issue, it did.
Yeah.
So, and they might have switched artists halfway through.
Thank God. Well, the thing, the art was never
bad. And then
bad.
They switched back. No, I mean halfway through the issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I thought was weird, but
it's mainly I think during the action sequences, because when they show Black Canary and she was on those shipping containers, that was obviously by a different artist.
Oh yeah, so Black Canary gets to the bad guy's water base, and of course they capture her. They trank her, and they're going to use her to draw Green Arrow out, and they do. Green Arrow and a guy named Diggle. And I don't know who this guy is.
It's a character from the TV show that they felt a need to interject into this comic book series.
Oh, okay. I don't watch the TV show, so that's why I don't know. But he's some kind of superhero, too. Mm-hmm.
He's a supporting cast. I don't know if he necessarily has superpowers, but he
is. Well, Green Arrow doesn't, so.
Yeah, so it'd be kind of, well, whatever.
Yeah, but he showed up and he fought Green Arrow for about a page, and then they decided to team up. So he went to his tech guy, who they convinced to help them. So he found out where he didn't find out where their base was, but he found out what they were doing. And then, they somehow knew to cut in, and he's like, "Hey, look at this." And they had, you know, Black Canary there, and she's got the fucking, they're about to kill her if you don't come and you don't bring the fucking, the laptop with all the information you just got. So their tech guy informs him. He's like, "Well, we got that message, but the good news is I tracked the signal back to their base, and I know where it is." Mm-hmm. And then he spilt water onto the laptop that they wanted.
Moron.
Not on purpose, by the way. He actually knocked the water over onto it. And this is a laptop, so that would most likely destroy the hard drive. So, bad form. But Green Arrow and Diggle now, they're showing up to the base. And it's going to be war. Oh, and they also showed that their army of burned people. So we knew they were doing the human trafficking. Apparently what they do with human trafficking is they get the people and then they dip them in this stuff, which burns their outer layer of their outer layers of skin off. And then they look like they're burnt under it, and it may also mind control them.
Yeah, because weren't they actively going after Green Arrow toward the end of this book?
Yeah. Well, but so, yeah, so he's going to go try to kill them, I guess. I don't know if Green Arrow kills or not. I don't think he does.
Yeah, I don't think he does.
But he's going to go to try to stop them.
That's where the issue ends off.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
It's funny, the last two times I've started reading Green Arrow, I kind of felt like my arm was being twisted, but I really enjoy the book now. Especially
because you're like, oh, he's a lib.
Well, it's not just that. It's just it kind of reads like a generic DC title, so I'm just like, okay, I'm an adult. I don't need to be reading these generic-ass stories that are written partially for children. But they're good, and the art's amazing.
This is one of the DC books I'd ever read and thought, oh, they're writing this for kids.
Well, you know, like a lot of people watch that TV show.
Oh, yeah, but it's not like that.
Yeah, but they'll keep the story really simple. So I'm like, well, who's the target audience for this? It's got to be like, I don't know, kids. I don't know.
The Green Arrow book?
Yeah.
You think kids are reading a story about evil bankers who secretly control the world and do human trafficking so they can get people to dip into their burn pits?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, this is definitely not for kids, dude. I don't know what kind of kid shit you watch.
Well, maybe if you're like 10 or 12, like, come on. They can accept a little bit more mature stuff.
Yeah, but they're reading, like, you know, the more punchy books.
True that. Speaking of punchy books, Justice League Issue 2, writer Brian Hitch, art by Tony S. Daniel.
The aliens are everywhere, and there are earthquakes all over the world all at once, which is not normal and bad. So, Batman says, we gotta ask him for help. And we all know they're fucking talking about Superman. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no mystery in this, but a few times they mentioned we have to ask him for help. So it all builds up to the end of the issue where Batman shows up and he's asking Superman for help, but he points out he doesn't trust him because this isn't the Superman he knows. This is some other guy. And he pointed out, he's like, while we were fighting Rao, while we were fighting fucking Darkseid, this asshole was active and he never helped us.
Well, he brought up, I think when we first started reading the Superman Lois and Clark title, he mentioned even when they were fighting Darkseid, he was like, well, I thought about stepping in, but it looks like they had the situation under control. But if it looked like it was starting to spill out, it was more than they could handle, I would have stepped in.
Yeah, he would have stepped in. So, but Batman doesn't know that. So, he goes to ask him for help and he's like, but he tells him he has to go to the center of the earth. So apparently they're going to send Superman into the center of the earth to figure out what is causing or to put a stop to all the earthquakes. And Superman's the only one who can do this.
Yeah.
That was how it ended. It was fine. It was a building issue and we're going to officially get Superman on the team, I imagine.
Yeah, it was in this issue, because I think we talked about it last time we reviewed this book. Even you, of all people, said, doesn't get a lot better in the second issue, I'm going to drop this book. And this book didn't do a whole lot to improve upon that first issue, but it gave me just enough to where I'm like, okay, I'll stick with it.
I'd like to see what happens in the storyline and how they resolve it, and I like to see real Superman interacting with the Justice League.
I like that you're just totally dismissive of all the stuff they've done with New 52 and you're just calling
them. Okay, here's the deal though. Here's the deal. Batman is still Batman. We know that. Flash is still Barry Allen because he remembered what came before.
Well, Batman's a couple of years younger, isn't he?
Well, yeah, they're all younger, but still they are the same people because, you know, if they meet up with Wally, they'll remember the past, which means it's their past, which means that Superman is really not Superman because this is the Superman from the pre-New 52, the pre-Flashpoint Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they are all the real characters, but that Superman was not the real fucking Superman. This one is the real Superman. Therefore, by me calling him the real Superman, that is factually accurate.
But then they introduced, I think it was in the Rebirth issue, that he's not what he seems. So it still could be something that this is not the legit old school Superman.
No, it's him.
You don't know.
Yeah, I do.
I'm going to go on the record for saying something's up because they wouldn't.
There's two books about him.
Yeah, but why would they bring that up if there was a point to it?
It was the evil guy who said that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't fucking trust heels. They lie. All he did was room with monitors all day and fucking monologue to himself. I wouldn't trust a fucker like that.
Either you're really getting away from your receiver or something's going up with your connection.
Oh, I sat down outside.
Oh, okay.
That's the problem. All right, I'm back up. Yeah, so, I mean, this is an improvement, but, you know, if I finish the first storyline and there's not something to hook me into the next one.
Yeah, but like I said, we read the Hitch run when he was doing Justice League of America, and that was good. We never had
No, it never finished. They did beat Rao. We know that.
Didn't they explain that away in the last issue? They were like, oh, by the way, we fought Rao, everything turned out great.
Well, yeah, and they brought it up again in this issue. He's like, you didn't help us with Rao.
It's one of those things to where I understand what happened from the business perspective. Don't keep bringing it up then.
I like Hitch's point of view on this. Like the fucking Justice League, that book went what, like 50 issues?
The
50 plus?
The Johns series?
Yeah, did it get up to 52 issues?
It got up to 52 issues.
And the only fucking things they mention is Hitch's fucking 6-issue unfinished villain and Darkseid. That was it. That was all the Justice League did.
Well, did you read that run?
No.
Well, there you go. There's a reason for that. He wants to focus on the positive. He wants to accentuate the positives and hide the negatives.
Oh, he's like Paul Heyman?
Yes. Go back and read a couple issues of that Johns run. Johns is a pretty good writer from the stuff I've read so far, but that Justice League run of his, oof.
By the way, I went to the library today. You know what I almost got?
Let's see.
They had the entire, every volume of Blackest Night.
Ooh, nice.
And I thought, maybe I should read this to figure out what the fuck happened and why there are 8 million different kinds of Green Lanterns. But then, at the last minute, because you can only check out 3 books at a time in your first 90 days as a member. And, you know, we only got library cards up here like a month ago. So I had to put one back, and I put that one back. I got 2 volumes of Bone for Jack. Ooh, and nice. I got a fucking phone book sized thing, an autobiographical story of life in China from the start of the revolution until modern times, written by a French guy and drawn by a Chinese dude who is the one the biography is about.
Oh, okay, cool.
And thus far, I will say that this Chinese artist is acceptable. He's not great. Writing's all right.
Okay. Don't let pro wrestler Lance Storm find out about you going to the library.
I know. He fucking hates libraries. It's like stealing from the authors.
What a weirdo, right?
Yeah, he's fucking crazy. I'm surprised he's not cutting promos on the network, because the wrestlers aren't getting paid for me watching shit on there.
Well, you know, it cuts in between him and cutting promos on Clouds.
Eh.
All right, for our next book, Nightwing, Issue 2, writer Tim Seeley, art by Javier Fernandez.
Wait, what is this?
This is Nightwing, homie.
Oh, yeah, so Raptor is apparently not a 100% bad guy.
But he's not 100% good guy either, because he straight up calls up Nightwing on his shit, and he's like, you know what, I'm not going to let you do what you're trying to do against the Parliament of Owls.
Yeah. Well, because he wants to get him too for some reason. But either way, they finished their fight, and he worked with him, and he made a date with Batgirl, and she totally would have fucked him too if the Killing Joke cartoon is any indication.
What are you trying to say there, Alex?
Yeah.
We have some SJWs listening who will be none too pleased.
Yeah, well.
Doesn't even try. I feel like that's all that happened in this issue. They found the container with the people. The Parliament of Alice was happy. And then Raptor calls him on his what he's trying to do.
Yep. It was a good issue. There's just not a lot to talk about.
No. But
it was effective at telling its story.
But at the same time, it's not a bad book.
No. No, I didn't mean that as a negative. I meant it as a positive. And it's, you know, it's just, it was good, but it told its story effectively, and there wasn't a lot hidden in it.
Okay, and a question I have for you going forward, I know we should have probably talked about this off air, as we very quickly start leaving DC. Are you going to continue to read Superman? Because if not, then I'll just skip my Superman review then.
Well, I have to get caught up.
Okay.
This is the thing, because you informed me, I started reading Superman this week late because I forgot to read it. Mm-hmm. And I get about 6 pages in and I go, dude, I have no fucking idea what's going on in this. And you reminded me, well, you didn't read the last issue.
Yeah, but at the same time, I also, when I last reviewed it as well, not a whole lot happened. All that happened in the last issue was the thing what happened with Jonathan when he bumped his head. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know to send him to a doctor. So he thought he'd go to the old Superman from the New 52 continuities, Fortress of Solitude, to see what's up. Maybe the Kryptonian biology is a little bit different, or to try to have some kind of reference point. And it's there. He meets up with Eradicator, who he starts fighting, but then he realizes Eradicator is a good guy. And that's how the last issue ends. And this issue, they start fighting because for what reason why, he tells Superman, oh, we got to bring back the Kryptonians, and the only way we could do that is by killing your family and Lois. And it's like, oh, I'm not cool with that. In this issue, they had Superman and Jonathan, his son, fighting against Eradicator. And you read half of the issue, and you read the part where they obviously kill Eradicator at the end, but that's where they
well,
left
no,
off.
Well, no, not at the end. They beat him in the first 5 pages. So.
That's what I'm saying. You read like maybe the first half of the book.
Oh, well, yeah.
But my only thing with this book is, obviously they're trying to get over the fact that Jonathan has Superman powers, but they keep forgetting that he's also half human, so I don't understand how already he's helped fighting against Eradicator. Considering the reason why they were there from the get-go is because he fell out of a tree.
Right.
It's kind of inconsistent. Just pointing things out there. That was Superman issue 4, writer Peter J. Tomasi, art by Patrick Gleason. All right, it's going to do it for the DC portion of the show, but we're not going to go too far because we're going to be talking Vertigo books with Art Ops issue 10, writer Sean Simon, art by Matt Bruttage. And I was wondering when I was reading this, it was only until now when I read that, I was like, this isn't Mike Allred again, because it's the same guy who does it where it's close enough, but there's a little things here and there where it kind of tips off that it's Mike Allred.
I don't know what he's doing. Like, I don't understand. Like, this is his book. And he doesn't fucking draw it.
That's supposed to be the draw of the series. It's like, oh, okay, this is a pretty good story, but the real draw is supposed to be the Allred art, and it seems like he's taking every other issue off.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's not like nothing. Like, in the last one, I suggested, well, a lot didn't really happen in that issue, mm-hmm. or in those issues, so maybe that's why he took it off. Well, a lot happened in this one. So, the book opens up, and Mona Lisa is getting ready to give birth, and Danny Doll has to be there, and Reggie's all pissed off, because he's like, the fuck do you think you're doing here? He's like, I'm here to be a granddad, good granddad to my grandson. He's like, you were never a fucking dad to me.
So you got to earn that. He's like, he's open to the idea of talking to his dad again, but he's like, this is a very special moment in my life. You can't just waltz on in and suddenly be my grandfather. You have to earn that role.
Well, because he has a hard on because he's like, oh, it's the first human art hybrid child. Mm-hmm. And this is a big deal. And by the way, when they did the ultrasound, it was just a baby, but there was like the art shit floating around it. So it wasn't really anything amazing. But, okay, so the doctor's there and he's getting ready to deliver, but he has to go do something. And the nurse is told to keep her calm, but the nurse is one of the neighborhood dads and he fucking cut her stomach open and tore the baby out. Now, that sounds incredibly violent, and it is, but keep in mind, she's the Mona Lisa, she's a piece of art. Mm. So cutting their stomach open doesn't actually kill them, but she did have a horrific gaping stomach hole.
Oof.
And like stumbles out, and she's all fucked up, and she's like, they stole my baby. So they rush her off and put her in a bathtub full of paint. I guess that's...
It sounds absurd, but when you think about the physics of that universe, it's like, it makes sort of sense.
Yes, in the context of the series, it makes sense. Danny Doll, so they're holding the baby hostage, and Danny Doll goes to meet with them. He tells all the art that he'd been protecting that, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore, I have to go. And he shows up, and he offers to join the neighborhood dads if they give his grandson back.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell him, all right, but you got to get some different clothes because you're dressed way too outlandish for us. Because he shows up in, like, purple shit, and, like, they got to wear their pleated khakis, and they're going to God, I hope we have episodes where, like, or issues where they, like, fucking teach him how to, like, watch football and be manly and...
I could probably learn a thing or two from that.
Well, yeah, you could. They're going to teach him how to be a man. But meanwhile, the body, along with a bunch of other movie characters, is locked up in his cage because he's not filming. But he has vomited out the original Art Ops team, pointing out that it was Danny who made him swallow them, but he drugged them all. So the body, the reason he couldn't explain why he didn't know they were inside him, because he said, usually I know.
It's hard to forget that kind of thing when people are inside you.
Yeah, well, it's hard for him to tell. But he, he vomited them out, and Regina met Velvet Girl, whatever her name is, and she pointed out she's a new member of the team. But they went to go rescue Reggie, I guess. Excuse me. Yeah, that's what's going on. It is another issue. I still like it. I want Allred to come back, though.
I can't imagine what he's busy drawing. I know he does other titles, but I can't imagine what he's that busy with considering this. I don't want to say this book maybe would have never got off the ground without him. But he is the draw, so the idea of him not being on it's kind of weird.
Well, he's still drawing the covers. I mean,
but it's also, this isn't the kind of book where if it doesn't come out in a given month, like, people are going to stop buying it. It's like, there's no rush.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why he's doing that, but whatever. It's fine, because I know he's going to keep coming back and drawing it as it goes on.
Okay. Sheriff of Babylon, issue 9, writer Tom King, art by Mitch Gerards. I love this book so much.
And you don't even read it.
I regularly didn't read it, because after a while, I didn't know what was going on. And I was like, you know what? We read enough books as it is. Dave and Alex like this book. That's the one I'm openly not going to read. Whoa, with Dave not here, I'm forced to pick up the slack. And now I'm reading. I'm like, wow, this book's gotten pretty good.
Yeah, and it ends in like 3 issues.
Yeah, and it's only running 12 issues. Oh, well. Serves me right, right? Yeah. I guess maybe I can go back now and read it in trade.
So, they have it all set up so they can kill Abu Rahim, the terrorist number one over there in Iraq. And Chris is there, and he's like talking to the agent guys, and Sophia and Nasir are there, and they're sitting in a room together because they're both working for him, air quotes. So that's all going on. So, you know, they're talking to each other. All the different characters are talking to each other. Nasir and Sophia are talking to each other, although Nasir is not the most talkative fellow on earth anyway. So he's just occasionally making snide remarks, and I really like him. Chris meets with the CIA operative who was leading the team that killed Nasir's wife. And Chris does not like this fucking guy. Like, he's sitting there with him, and he's like, oh. He's like, yeah, I was there when that woman died. And he's like, her name was Fatima, and you killed her. And he's like, well, no, I didn't kill her.
Yeah.
He's like, the guys jumped the gun. They killed her. He's like, but I didn't kill her. And then the interesting part of this is, if you'll remember, Sheriff of Babylon started when one of his cops got murdered. Mm-hmm. Well, this guy revealed, he's like, yeah, after all this time, like, he doesn't even feel bad that he killed this chick. And that's what's pissing Chris off. He does not feel bad at all, because he pretends to be upset for like a minute. And then he starts talking again about, oh, I've been chasing this guy down for years, and we're finally going to get him, and I'm so happy. He's like, we got to him close once before. I mean, my guy got right up to him, but that didn't work out. And he's like, what guy? And he's like, oh, yeah, that cop of yours. And again, he doesn't say his fucking name. He has no idea what his name is. He got this guy killed and doesn't know his name. So Chris tells him his name, but then he fucking reaches for his gun. Like, he's going to kill this motherfucker. Well, obviously, we don't get a resolution to that because you got to wait for the next issue. But Nasir and Sophia get the information that, oh, Rahim, he's on his way. And they're like, well, what's up with the car? He's like, oh, it's just one guy in it. And Nasir's like, it's not fucking him. And she's like, well, it could be. We got to go through with this. He's like, this is a fucking waste of time. It's not him. He wouldn't come by himself. She's like, well, we got to see. So this guy shows up, and all they knew is he was wearing an American, like, bulletproof vest, like a Kevlar vest.
Yeah.
And you fucking know at this point he's got a suicide vest on.
I'm surprised
on.
They let him in with that, because they checked him for weapons, but he's like, oh, he insisted on wearing the bulletproof vest.
Well, no, the thing is, it was her, him, and another guy, because he doesn't know the military's there. Mm-hmm. He has no fucking idea about that. And she doesn't, like, have a crew of protectors or anything. She just had the one guy. So it's not like she has a proper setup, but he comes in to meet with them. And she doesn't actually know what he looks like. She's never really met him. Nasir has. And Nasir confirms, like, yeah, that's him. But he takes off the fucking bulletproof vest. He's got the suicide vest on under it. And then the issue ends. So.
Just wonderful.
Hey, I mean, he'll kill a lot of Americans, but if he sets that thing off, he's gonna die too. Mission accomplished.
Did you forget something about this issue?
Maybe.
The Great Jim.
Oh yeah, this guy shows up in the front, and he's like one of the head agents, and he's such a fucking tool.
Yeah.
Like, Nasir, Chris, and Sophia are all standing along the wall, and he's like a higher up, and he comes to personally congratulate them because they did so good on the mission. But number one, he fucking looked just like John Madden to me.
Boom!
So the whole time I'm reading this, I'm just waiting for him to say, Ace's place. Now the goal in a football game is you got to score more points than the other team.
It would have been funny he did that, but with the idea of the American military in Iraq. Now the point is for the military to go out there and actively kill the insurgents.
You got to kill more of them than they kill of us.
And that's how you win the war.
That's how you win the war. And then he fucking breaks out a board and starts drawing all over it. God, John Madden, before he retired, he was fucking amazing because he gave no shits. He'd be like, well, they're fucking over here and then they got to run the ball down here. And he'd be fucking drawing the thing off the board and shit. You'd look at it sometimes and he would have the entire fucking thing covered with like little hatch marks and X's and O's and a little oval for the football. Like he would draw the fucking way it tracked. Like he had Alzheimer's. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, but you can tell John Madden he can't be on TV. You can tell advertisers John Madden can't be on TV. Come on.
Well, they eventually had to take him off. I think he retired, but they should have taken him off about a year before. It's because fucking Dennis Miller shit the bed with his weird references.
Yeah, I know. You wouldn't believe this for a while, but he was the only reason why I was watching Monday Night Football for a while.
Well, that's because you don't like football. That was so fucking weird when he did Monday Night Football because it's like, well, the thing of it is Dennis Miller loves fucking football. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to him, he did understand the game. It's just he couldn't fucking stop being Dennis Miller. It was a problem. Every time they get these fucking conservative talking heads to do shit with football, it never works out. Like when Rush was kind of a racist.
Yeah,
he was doing the ESPN, the talking head bit.
But the worst one was, like you said, the Miller one, where it's like, who is this trying to appeal to?
I mean, here's the thing with football is so many people watch it that it's not like, you know, WWE where the average person makes less than $20,000 a year or whatever the fuck it is. There is a portion of it that's an educated audience because so many people watch football, but there is another huge portion of it that, you know, fuckers who never went to high school watch fucking football. It's more of America's pastime than baseball is. You need someone who just fucking talks about the game. You don't need someone making fucking references to wars in the fucking 1300s. Because nobody's going to get that. I went to college and I don't understand some of his references. I don't know who he was for. Poor bastards.
You know, I'm curious who has to say something about Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football. Mike Graham. Mike Graham, what did you think about Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football?
Never drew a dime.
Mike Graham is a new character on our show. That's actually, for people who don't know, let me explain that.
Yeah, I know, because it kind of needs an explanation for people that don't
watch. Most of our listeners don't watch pro wrestling. Mike Graham was a marginal wrestling personality.
He'll probably agree with you, because even in those Legends of Wrestling roundtables, he said, I was a nobody.
Yeah, he was the son of Eddie Graham, who was an incredibly famous and influential Florida-based promoter. He ended up getting a job as a nothing wrestler in the Crockett organization, which became WCW, and then he eventually made it onto the booking team. He was also friends with Hulk Hogan, which always helps you. He also killed himself, so he's dead now. So it's okay to make fun of him?
In this context, yes, because it's a comic show.
Well, his son killed himself, too.
We're not making light that he killed himself. We're just informing people that he killed himself.
People who killed themselves are pieces of shit. It's okay to make fun of them. But on the Death of WCW DVD that WWE did, there is a scene when he's talking about Jeff Jarrett. And he said a line, something to the effect of, he broke a million guitars, never drew a dime.
In fact, I have it right here, the whole thing.
Never drew a dime.
I am the chosen one.
He broke 6,000 guitars. Never drew a dime, but he thought he was the man. And he really thought in his little Tennessee brain that he was bigger and better and would draw more money than Hulk Hogan.
So I don't know what. I that's just always been a line for me. Never drew a dime.
Never drew a dime.
Yeah, because it stuck with me. But I thought we should make Mike Graham a part of our show. Because it's a great little, it's a good drop.
If we decide to keep comic book sales, if something goes out of print, we could just say, never Drew would die.
We could have a new weekly segment where the worst book we read, the book that never drew a dime. Oh, that'd be good.
I like it.
Never
All right.
drew a dime.
All right. Let's move on to the Image portion of the show with Kill or Be Killed, issue 1, writer Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips.
Okay, so we read this because it was Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
Yeah, this, you know, as long as we've been doing the show, we've never once reviewed an Ed Brubaker book, which is odd. Considering I think when we started doing the show, the fade out had already been a couple issues in.
Did we not read some Punisher that he wrote?
No, I would remember.
Early
that.
On?
It was never Brubaker doing it. Believe me, I would remember. In fact, you know what? Now that I think about it, it may have been his run that ended when we started the show.
Okay, I was reading that run.
It's a good
but
run.
But, yeah. Yeah, his run that he got fucked out of ending. Yeah, but, so, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, they also did Sleeper, which I've loved forever.
Oh, you know and what? I take that back. We did review Sleeper on this show.
Yeah, there you go. But I mean, that was, I don't know if that was the first thing they did together, but they pair up a lot because they work incredibly well together. So this was their new book and I saw it and Image was pushing it pretty heavily too because it's Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. So I said, we have to read this. I had no idea what it was about.
And considering who was on it, it's like, you didn't have to twist my arms. I'm like, sold.
Yeah. So I'm reading this book and it opens up with a guy in a red hood, killing people. Killing bad guys. But then he explains the backstory to all this. And the backstory is, he's a 28-year-old guy who went to college and then left and then went, he actually says this weird way, he got kicked out of college because he tried to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
Did they kick you out of college for that?
That sounds weird. Wouldn't they do the opposite? Wouldn't they give you a good grade so you wouldn't, like, so you can get your stuff together? Like,
well, no, because then everybody fake killing themselves.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I was struggling in a semester, I would fake kill myself.
Well, either way, I heard there used to be a rumor that if your roommate kills himself.
Yeah, that was the basis of that one movie with Zach Morris.
I never saw that movie.
It was Dead Man on Campus. There we go. That was the name of the title.
I assume that's not true either. But, well, anyway. So he's a 28-year-old still going to college. Who, he doesn't have a very happy life. He's got a roommate who's a couple years younger than him, and he had a best friend, Kira, who was a chick. And she was his best friend, but she started dating his roommate. So now she only comes over to hang out with him, really, and barely talk, or to hang out with her boyfriend, who barely talks to him. So he said now, since they're together so much, he's not really friends with the guy. He didn't say this, but it's probably because, like, he stole the girl who was his friend, mm-hmm. and he's pissed at him. He didn't come out and say that, but that's probably what it is. And, so, one night, his life kind of sucks because all he does is like study and he doesn't have any friends anymore. And he's got to live with this guy who's got his girlfriend there. And his girlfriend used to be his best friend. They're always making out and shit. So he's not really that comfortable with it. But one night he's sitting in his room and through the air vents, he can hear him talking. He hears her say that she feels really bad for him. And then at that point, she starts, like, whenever dude leaves the house or leaves the room, she'll, like, start kissing him and stuff. And the thing about that is you might think, like, oh, that's cool, though, because she wants to get on him. But the indication is she's only doing it because she feels bad for him.
Oh, then why wouldn't the guy be cool with it then?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's actually what she was doing, because that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, that would make it worse for him if it was never going to go any further. So he's debating, you know, finally telling her that, you know, he loves her and this and that. But, he felt so terrible about this that the only person he cared about just thought he was a fucking loser that he decides to try to kill himself. However, as often happens, I read, when someone tries to kill themselves at the last minute, he realized, no, life is worth living. You've got something to live for. But he still sort of fell off the building. He's got to jump off.
Yeah,
of.
He fell off. He jumped off the top of a 6-story building. But
No. It was taller than 6 stories.
Oh.
But halfway down, there was like old clotheslines hanging and there was like a rug on it. And he landed on the rug and then kind of hung there for a minute and then he fell again. So he fell from less of a height than he would have.
And then when he hit the ground, he sort of just, he fell on his back. He did a back bump and.
Yeah. And he goes up to his room and what is apparently a demon or death appears before him.
Oh God, the demon. I have to put over, let's see, who did the art here again?
Sean Phillips.
I got to put over Sean Phillips' art. The way he drew the demon, so cool, so spooky looking.
Yeah. Now, so this thing appears to him and it tells him like, hey, you know, you cheated me out of death. So now once a month, you have to kill someone for me or you'll die. And it can be bad people.
He's like, I'm not picky.
He's like, you just kill bad people if you want, but you have to kill people, which explains what was going on in the first part of the issue. Of course, the issue with this guy's not a superhero. He has no fighting skills. He's kind of a puss. He explained that in the beginning because they had a scene where he like went out with a girl and they were on the bus and like they were talking about the girl and he looks at the guys and they're like, what? Do something, pussy. And he doesn't do anything, which, you know, logically there were 3 of them and the guy is kind of a puss. So he's not going to do anything, but that happened earlier in the issue.
Although, yeah, I think when he's faced with the idea of he has to kill someone or he will die. And after going through this life-changing experience, he doesn't want to die, so.
Yeah, so, but he doesn't do anything because he's not a fucking killer. So he goes on, but then after about a month, he gets really fucking sick, like super, super sick, and he won't go to the doctor. And then he doesn't get better. But he realized as soon as he started, because he's walking, I believe he's actually walking to the doctor, and what looked like some homeless guys just start beating the shit out of him. And that's when he decided he would go along with the plan, and he would kill someone. And he said when he decided to kill someone, he automatically started feeling better. Now, the thing with this story is, the indication is there is no demon. The guy fucking cracked his head when he fell, and he was probably hallucinating.
But at the same time, the idea that it's an actual demon isn't that far-fetched as well.
It could, but even he points this out in the book. He's like, there probably was no fucking demon. He's like, I don't believe in angels and demons and all that shit. I'm not religious. He's like, but my subconscious is telling me that, you know, maybe I need to kill someone. And the thing is, they were very clever in the way they did this, because the only times the demon appeared were after he cracked his fucking head falling off a building. And then the other time was when he was in like day 5 of having a huge fever. Now, what can happen if you have a really high fever and you don't get it treated? You can hallucinate.
But the fact that his health is so tied to the idea
but
of
he
him
was,
killing
but
him.
The thing is, he could have had the flu and he never went to the doctor. Like, that shit can happen naturally. It could have just been a coincidence. And by the time he was walking to the doctor, I mean, he was ready to walk at that point. He probably was getting better. And the reason he felt better after getting the shit kicked out of him was probably adrenaline. There's no demon. I'm telling you that right now. That's a swerve. And they're indicating it's a swerve. There's no demon. I guarantee it. And the story is actually more interesting if there is no demon. Because if there is, it's kind of like, what's the fucking point?
It's a little spooky, it's a little too over the top. I don't know.
Yeah. Are you adding it in?
I'm fine with them writing that line and like messing with the reader. We don't get it for sure 100% one way or another.
I think this is a guy who's tried to kill himself multiple times. He's obviously dealt with depression. Depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in your brain. People who have depression, it's not because they're sad. They just have depression because something's off with their fucking head. I think there's something more seriously wrong with this guy. And the demon is an expression of his slight psychosis. Because a normal person does not, especially a normal person who is not a fighter, he's not a very aggressive person, but he has decided he needs to go out once a month and kill criminals. That is not normal. That is not normal at all. So I think as the story moves on, we're going to find out this guy is just a little bit crazy and there's no demon. But if they keep hinting at it, it'll make the story more interesting. This is a very strong first issue because it's not a typical comic book hero. This guy has none of the traits of a hero.
No, not at all. The fact that he kills people. But the thing is, he tries to justify it by saying, if I must kill people, I will kill the worst of the worst.
But the key of the book is this guy, he's not strong. He's not particularly smart. He doesn't have any great event in his life. You know, it's not like Superman, his fucking parents got killed by or Batman, his parents got killed by criminals. He has nothing like that. He's not a fucking superhero. He's a normal guy who is doing this, 100% normal. They haven't shown yet if he trained or anything. I don't imagine he did, because in the first couple pages, he just had a shotgun, and he was just shooting dudes. Like, anyone can do that.
Yeah,
and he also kind of got the shit kicked out of him. He just got lucky. That's the only reason he lived.
Yeah, they even bring up earlier in the issue when he's riding on the bus with his girlfriend at the time, and the three guys are harassing his girlfriend. He's like, oh, I wish I could be that kind of guy that just go up there and beat the crap out of him, but the fact of the matter is I don't know how to fight.
Yeah, and I think that is a great hook for a main character because he's so different from every other comic book protagonist who are always, you know, they're either ultra capable with like one crippling flaw or they're absolutely perfect like Superman. This guy is not that. He's nothing like that. This is one of the weakest characters we have ever read in a comic as a protagonist, and that's interesting that he would do this, and that's unlike anything Brubaker's done that I've read. So I'm really looking forward to this series continuing because I think this could be fucking great.
Okay. Let's see. Well, since we're talking all things Image, did you want to go into Walking Dead 157?
Negan came back with Alpha's head.
Awesome.
After murdering her and cutting her head off.
Yeah, obviously because with Dave not here, I'm forced to pick up the slack and I started reading this. And I didn't know it was in the bag. He's like, I got something for Rick.
Yeah, he, another kid who is mad at Rick, he let Negan out. Negan immediately went to the Whisperers. I had been calling since he got, you know, let out that he was going to kill Alpha and tell Rick that he killed her. That is exactly what happened. The reason I knew this is because Kirkman is not an untalented writer, but he's become incredibly predictable. So that's exactly what he did. He came back to Rick with the head, and Rick told him that, okay, you will never be in a position of power again. You will never be able to lead people again, but you did help us here. And if we're going to build this new society, the point of prison is reform. Perhaps you have been reformed a little, but I still don't trust you. He's like, if you do everything I tell you, if you're on the first line against our fight with the Whisperers, if you don't fuck anything up, you will get an outpost. You will have enough weapons to defend the outpost. You will have enough food to take care of yourself. And if you continue to be an asset, we'll talk again. He's like, but we need to get through this first thing. And Rick has been training all the people to fight. He's taught them all how to shoot, et cetera, et cetera. So we had that going on. He's confident they could win. They're making battle plans. The Whisperers, we saw Beta, who was Alpha second, who loved Alpha, is super pissed off that Alpha was killed. And he's like, okay, we're going to war right now. We're going. So Rick gets people from all the other kingdoms and they show all the other things and they showed some stuff. They showed the kingdom. Ezekiel's dead. A guy that Michonne is in charge, but she's not around much. And there's another guy there who just wants to go along with everything. The one dude is like, listen, they fucking haven't checked with us since Ezekiel died. And then the first time they check with us, it's to ask us for people to go fight their fucking war. This is bullshit. You should be our leader. It shouldn't be Michonne. Blah, blah, blah. They cut all that shit in. They cut Dwight in, who is pointing out that he does not fucking trust Negan at all. They showed Eugene, who's had the ham radio, talking to somebody, and he decided to tell them where he is, which is probably going to bite him on the ass in the end. He's avoided doing it until now. And the chick he's talking to, Stephanie, is like, hey, we weren't going to do that. And then she goes, we're in Ohio. And that made him feel better. And it's like, well, you fucking told them exactly where you were, and she told you a state. Dumbass. So they might get attacked too, but so they're all positioned for battle, and their thinking is we're going to be fine because, you know, we have guns and they don't. We're better armed than them. And we've trained as an army. The Whisperers really haven't, but the issue with the Whisperers is since they wear the zombie skin, they walk with the fucking zombie horde. They have their own.
Oh, is that what that was? Cause I was yeah. terrified at first. Cause I'm like, oh, holy shit. How are these zombies so coordinated?
No, they have their own zombie army basically. But, you know, Rick said, well, don't worry. We can draw it away. It'll be fine. So they said, okay, we got a guy who's going out to be our lookout. He'll be able to spot everything early. He'll be there in about 30 minutes. They show the guy climbing up, and as soon as he climbs up, fucking Whisperers are already there with their big zombie army. Rick and his people did not get ready soon enough, and shit's going to go down. This was part one of, I think it said, 6 in the Whisper War. So shit's going to go down.
And I'm glad it's a part one, because I'm like, I may actually be able to hang with this issue.
I kind of like an issue dealing with military strategy. Although the downside to that is none of these fuckers have any knowledge of that. Although they did bring up how they could flank them, which here's the thing. Flanking an enemy when the enemy is a zombie horde is not quite as useful.
No,
because it doesn't matter if you're shooting from the front and the back, because they're fucking zombies. Like, you're not going to break their goddamn line. They don't have a line. It's a mass of zombies with some people mixed in. But, you know, whatever. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Rick and the team are due for a giant failure because they haven't had one in so long.
And the fact that they're not prepared and the Whispers are making their way for them.
Well, they're somewhat prepared, and he did have a point in that they have all the guns, and that is a giant benefit. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. And before we wrap up with all things Image, since with Dave gone, I'm forced with the task of having to recap Tokyo Ghost. The last issue I sort of briefly went over because not a lot happened. It was a kind of a building issue. This one, we kind of had the idea of it's building up to a climax. I like the way this book opens up with Davey talking to, I don't know what, it was a hallucinary thing, but for whatever reason why he was riding like these little go-karts. And he's riding go-karts with like Attila the Hun and Hitler. And he's telling him about his plan of wiping everybody out of existence because they all have nanomachines in their system. So the idea is, you know, I can take control of everybody, make them do what I want. So my plan is I'm going to take them over. I'm going to force them to kill themselves. And the world's biggest genocide stunt of all time. He's like, that's a horrible idea. Even Hitler's kind of skeptical. He's like, really, dude? This is coming from me. He's like, I think that's a bad idea. Don't you want to just kill the mud people? and he said, that's only part of my plan. My whole plan going forward is I want to digitize all these people once they die with the idea that I'm doing them a favor because – you know, eventually they're going to have these human bodies and they're going to die out. And if I digitize everybody, they can live on in perpetuity forever. In a sense that I'd be doing them a favor. So whatever, that's where they leave off the story. And considering this book is called Tokyo Ghost and stuff that they've done in the past, the book is very much becoming the idea of technology versus nature. So Davies obviously looking to convert the entire world over digitally, and with the idea of him finally taking over the last holdout from the entire world, Tokyo, and renaming it Neo Tokyo, I was like, come on. How about some subtlety behind it? Because I'm like, it wasn't like on the nose, but there was so much of it like Akira. I'm like, you have to call it Neo Tokyo to where you have to be on the nose. So it was this issue that Debbie obviously gives up on Teddy with the idea of, whatever, I've lost Teddy. I have nothing to live for. I promise I protect this woman's child. That's really all I have to go with. And the son brings up the fact, he's like, you promised my mother that you would protect me, but the fact of the matter is I've been protecting you this whole time. And if you're going to go up against this entire army of digitalized people, you're going to need an army. And in that, she smiled. So later on the issue, she shows up to fight the digitized people with woodland animals.
Wow.
It's picking up considering the last couple issues they've been setting this up. But yeah, they're building up steam to a conclusion, and it's a little goofy, but I like the story with all the stuff they did with Teddy, but with them, Teddy going away, it's like, well, with the idea of the story being called Tokyo Ghost, it's that same old kind of boring story of the idea of technology versus nature. And it's like, okay, I've seen that before, and I've seen it done better than this. But with that said, it's still good enough to where if this book is going to wrap up at issue 12, I'm going to keep reviewing it. But yeah, this is a heavy issue where just a ton of shit happens, so. Okay, that's going to wrap up the Image portion of the show. Let's move on to Marvel with Civil War 2, Kingpin Issue 2, writer Matthew Rosenberg, art by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz.
Kingpin is able to become the kingpin of crime again because he has his Inhuman, who is untraceable mm-hmm. by Ulysses, and no one can figure out what he's doing. Some of the guys kind of turn against Kingpin, but...
Well, they try to turn against Kingpin.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. Kingpin also found out that one of the guys was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very horrific scene, he uncovers, he's like, so, oh, you're not a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Well, hey, so we've got this guy, and he says he's your handler, and we're going to kill him. And he's like, whatever, I don't give a shit, I don't know him. And then he's like, oh, okay, because we also have your wife and your kid, and we're going to kill them too. And he's like, no, I'm a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and yeah, he is my handler.
He breaks face then.
Yeah, and then he makes the Inhuman kill them.
He's like, I need you to show everybody that you're tough. You're my right-hand man if I'm going to be taking over as the king of crime. He's like, I need to have everybody show you're not a wuss.
Which is complete bullshit. He's doing the old trick. He's making this guy, because they showed, as Kingpin is having more and more meetings and stuff, he's making this guy do everything. Mm-hmm. The reason this guy's killing everyone, this guy's having all the meetings, is because he's the one actually doing the illegal acts. Kingpin is not, and therefore Kingpin can't get caught. Because this guy's doing absolutely everything.
Even though it's Kingpin that's pulling all the strings.
Exactly. So, yeah, that happened. And in the next issue, it's Punisher.
Yeah, because at the very end of this issue, obviously he's talking to the kid, tell him everything's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. We're going to build this empire. You're going to be my right-hand man. I just have to go out for a little bit. I trust you. You know, you're in this fortified fortress. You should be fine. So Kingpin starts to leave out. He's like, okay, I should be good. I'm not going to do anything illegal, so I could be away from the kid for a little bit. And it's then, yeah,
but then when he goes out to the car, though, he decides, you know what? I'm going to go back. Because the kid, like, he stayed... Because he got sick, or he collapsed because of stress or something. And Kingpin stayed with him the entire time. Like, he was chilling with the kid, watching movies with him and stuff. And then when he got better, he's like, yeah, you can come with me. And he said no, but Kingpin thought this was kind of fucked, that he wouldn't come with him. So at the last minute, he decided to go back in the building, but then a car bomb goes off. Ooh.
Who could have been?
Well, Kingpin's thinking it was, I think his name is Jonas. Mm-hmm. Kingpin's thinking it's his Inhuman, I bet, but it's not, because they spoil it with the cover of the next issue, which is just, hey, it's Punisher. Which, no. I don't know what they're going to do with that, because we know Punisher's not going to kill Kingpin. Because Kingpin's getting his own book.
Which is awesome, so. By the way. I think we talked about in the last issue. I was like, oh, I would love if they made a Kingpin series, and the whole idea is that he's winning, he's climbing his way back to the top of the crime empire.
Yeah, and they first set it up here, so that's good. We don't have... Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with Punisher. I don't like the art in this book, by the way.
Yeah, the last issue wasn't all that great, and I think it's still the same artist, but this was even this was still a lot more sloppy than his previous issue.
Yeah, I don't like his art, but I mean, I like the story, and I like the way he's written, so it's, you know, that part's fine, but I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, and since we're talking all things Punisher, Punisher issue 4, writer Becky Coolin, art by Steve Dillon.
Yes, so... Punisher fought this little girl is madly fucked up.
Well, she wasn't completely privy to everything that was going on, but at the same time, she also didn't want to die, and she's kind of used to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because, you know, she grew up with the crazy meth lab guy, but still, she's 10 years old, and she's acting like a 5-year-old. And that's, you know, but it's not important because she's not in the book anymore. Like, she's asking him for ice cream and shit.
Yeah, but there's even instances where that guy jumps in the moving van and is taking the guns, and she's almost unfazed by it. Like, she's obviously alerting Punisher to the idea of what's happening, but at the same time, it's not like she's particularly fazed by it.
Well, he's also, they're being shot at, and she's not getting scared. So, but no, Face, our bad guy, he took more of the super drug and is coming after Punisher with his army of hillbilly friends in his tank that he got. Punisher is still able to dispatch most of them. Meanwhile, the woman who makes the drug has a meeting with the ex-soldier guy who we saw in, I think it was the first issue. And he's like, hey, listen, Face is... he's off the fucking reservation here. Like, he's got a fucking tank. He's going after Punisher. The DEA is involved now. Like, this is bad news. We gotta control this guy. DEA is in fact involved. They show up in helicopter, and the helicopter gets shot down by Face. But the woman who's spearheading this and is telling everyone it's Punisher. Punisher's doing all this. We know it's Punisher. She actually lived, and she was pretty funny. She was the comic relief in this book. Just her reactions to shit was great. But yeah, Punisher's still going after him, and there were lots of explosions and lots of killing in this issue. And we have a crazy villain with sort of superpowers. He's an enhanced human.
Yeah, but he's not
Superman.
He's not a full-fledged superhero.
Yeah, like, pretty sure Punisher shoots him enough, he'll die.
Okay, I wouldn't say... I don't know how I phrase this, but someone who we both knew of saw a panel of this and said, why is Punisher black? Or the Punisher is black? ! And I had explained, no, it's just the way Steve Dillon draws it.
Yeah, Punisher's not black.
I don't know. But apparently this person that we know has been banned from the Wrestling Observer... board.
Who?
Nuthugger.
For what?
I don't know. Because I responded, no, Steve Dillon just draws Punisher weird. And Nuthugger.
Did he talk shit about trannies?
We're talking on Twitter. No, he says, thank God for that. I would have gone off on another rant had I not already been banned.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well.
Hashtag color bleeding. Hashtag Marvel. Hashtag Disney.
Oh, God.
Nuthugger continued to deliver.
He does not like when they change races. By the way, people, if you're wondering, he's not a white guy. So, I guess, doesn't that mean it's okay if he's kind of racist?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it's okay if you're not white.
Actually,
so.
he's got double going for him because he's of Muslim descent.
Yeah, there you go. He's some sort of Muslim.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a double excuse. You really can't go after him.
Yeah, so he's all right. There you go, guys. Don't hate on him.
Well, we hate on him for different reasons, but
yeah, that's because he likes completely different comics from us. What's the next book?
Doctor Strange, issue 10, writer Jason Aaron, art by Chris Blacho.
Okay, so answer me a question.
Did this end out of nowhere?
Empirical, no, because it's been building forever. Did he replace him in the basement and he is now going to get all the pain from the spells Dr. Strange
had? I wasn't 100% sure with. I thought he just threw him in there with the creature and I thought the creature just had its way with
Dr. Strange ended up, okay, this had such a, part of this was good and part of it was cheesy as fuck.
Yeah.
He merged with the pain monster that him and Wong created to, by explaining like, hey, you want to kill me, I get that, but this guy, he's going to kill me and then he's going to kill you. And the thing decided, well, I want to be the one who kills you, so okay. So he merges with Doctor Strange to fight this guy and Strange basically punches him into submission, punches him with the magic monster and defeats him also with the help of all the people Doctor Strange ever helped who take the pain for Doctor Strange. It was very cheesy. It was very Final Fantasy IV. A little bit.
It's fine. It's Final Fantasy IV, right?
It was very Earthbound at the end of the game when you have to do the praying to beat Gygax. Yeah, it was very much like that. But he beat it, but then the important thing is at the end, he's like, but there's still no magic. Like, which is what I pointed out, and I'm really glad they did that because I said, you know, if he defeats this guy, isn't there a problem that this guy has already destroyed all the magic? Well, apparently, yes, that is a problem. Dr. Strange beat him and then said, okay, I've tried like every spell I know and none of them work. There's no magic in the world.
Yeah,
so
he obviously saved his own life by stopping this guy, and he prevented him from killing more magic, but the fact of the matter is, he did wipe out most of magic already.
Yeah, which is gonna be a problem, but, I mean, there's gonna be two Doctor Strange books soon, so I'm pretty sure magic is coming back.
Maybe.
Well, it'll sort of have to, or he's not gonna do much in his books. Although that could be what the Doctor Strange Punisher crossover is about.
Yes.
He doesn't have magic anymore, so he has to get guns.
Yeah. And that's why he teamed up with the Punisher.
Well, but the mini's called Magic Bullets, so. I don't think that's gonna happen. No, I'll see where it goes. It was a somewhat disappointing climax. Somewhat. Because I still thought it was time to end the storyline.
I thought it was too, but it seemed like I would expect it to go a little bit longer. Like obviously, in the last issue, they teased the confrontation, but at the same time, it's like the confrontation went one issue.
The story didn't need to go longer than 10 issues. He, and you know, he locked him up in his basement where his pain monster used to live. And by the way, the pain monster, it got away. It was a little smaller, but they showed it like walking down the street and he's like, oh, well, I guess I could turn to like vengeance now. So I don't know. Maybe he's going to go hang out with Ghost Rider.
That'd be cool.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see that guy back.
But the cool Ghost
Doctor Rider. Strange is going to have two comics, right?
Yes.
And he doesn't have that many villains. He's got, you know, what's his face?
Your
the one guy, and he's got Dread Dormammu, and Mephisto. Like, Doctor Strange doesn't have a big group of villains.
Baron Mordo, there we go.
Yeah, Baron Mordo, Dread Dormammu, and Mephisto. So, I mean, maybe they're just making a couple new villains to come back in the future.
Doctor Strange doesn't fight Shurima Goreth?
He does fight Shuma Gorath, but didn't Shuma Gorath appear as like a jobber in one of these issues?
It wasn't.
Didn't he get killed by the Empirical? Did they kill him?
No, I don't think he did.
I thought they did. I saw him in a book recently.
It was
Chuma Gorath isn't an interesting villain because he's just like a big monster.
I didn't know that much about the character, but I saw some of the talking scenes in that Marvel vs. Capcom 3 game. It's a funny character.
No, he's not actually like that, dude.
Oh, he's not?
No, that was for the game.
Well, use Secret Wars as an excuse to rewrite him, because
they can rewrite him as a guy from. That was such a weird character to put in Marvel vs. Capcom.
But they
like,
did.
It's like, who could we, like, they couldn't, like, why? I don't even understand why they used them.
Japan. And their fascination with tentacles?
Oh, yeah, they're like, oh, he's a tentacle monster, we'll pick him. Well, they could have put Omega Red in the game.
That's true, but those are robotic tentacles.
Octopus? Oh, does that not count?
No, it doesn't count.
Ooh, by the way, that reminds me, Jackpot Huge in Code Brew. Mm-hmm. The first page, it was just like, I guess it would have been like the cover. There's a piece of art, but they drew Slender Man in amongst the monsters.
Nice.
And Jack fucking popped huge. He's like, there's a Slender Man comic? And I go, no, Jack, it's more like a gag. And he goes, Slender Man's not funny at all. Slender Man is serious.
How does your 6-year-old child know who Slender Man is?
YouTube.
That's a little
he likes creepypasta.
Creepypasta is funny.
He told me he liked creepypasta, and then I had to Google what the fuck creepypasta was because I'm 32 years old and I'm not, you know, cool enough.
See, I'm curious, from your research, what did you determine what creepypasta was?
It's like creepy stories from the internet.
Yeah, it's like needlessly creepy stories.
And here's the thing, most of them aren't creepy.
It's like, did you know Slender Man was based off a real guy? It's like, okay, I don't care.
Well, Slender Man himself was a creepypasta.
Yes.
Because he was originally, some of those original pictures, the photoshops, they're pretty cool.
Otherwise known as urban legends, I think that's what creepypastas are basically.
Well, yeah, but these are coming from the internet.
Yes, 2016 internet, yeah, makes sense.
So.
Okay, since we're talking all things creepy, Moon Knight issue 5, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Greg Smallwood. Let me just say something real quick. I know we put over Kill or Be Killed as a really strong issue, but we haven't done a formal segment for Book of the Week, but if we still did it, this is going to be my pick for Book of the Week.
My pick for Book of the Week is Kill or Be Killed, by the way.
I'm not going to argue with that because these are both strong books.
If we did it. This, I don't think enough was revealed in it to make it Book of the Week, but it was a strong issue. In the last issue, Mr. Knight met up with Moon Knight.
Mr. Spectre.
Met up with him. And he led Moon Knight's main squeeze away. And then he was going to fight Moon Knight. So Moon Knight's fighting with him. And then he goes through a trippy little series of, like, his different personalities. Like, at one point, the orderlies show back up, and he's fighting them as his cabbie persona. And then he's fighting Moon Knight again. And then while he's fighting Moon Knight, he finds Seth, who is, like, tied up in a closet. And he's like, Seth, what's going on? I thought you were behind all this. And he's like, I'm not behind all this. He captured me. And he put me here. I didn't do shit. It was all him. So he runs up to the top and Moon Knight's there. And he's like, aha, you discovered. And he's like, well, who are you? And pulls off the Moon Knight mask and it's Khonshu. Khonshu tells him, like, Mark, listen, you're crazy. You've been really good serving me, but I need a new body. And I want yours. So just, you know, give up and give me your body and everything will be fine.
You can get your rest, your peace that you've been after.
Yeah. Yeah. Just give me your body. And Mark's like, no. And he jumps off the giant pyramid and then he wakes up and he's an actor in movies. Not like it's not like a meta thing where like he's an actor in a movie about Moon Knight yet, but he's an actor in movies and he seems really happy about this. And then the issue ends.
I get the feeling that's where it's going to go.
I get the feeling, Moon Knight is in fact balls crazy and that's what they've been showing in every issue, is that he's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And but maybe it's a villain is making him crazy.
Yeah, because especially the way that Khonshu acted, it acted sort of out of character for him.
Yeah, Khonshu doesn't have a body, first of all. It's not like, you know, my body is breaking down. No, Khonshu, like, appears as a spirit. He doesn't have a body. So his body could not break down. So, but we will see. This was an interesting issue because it didn't tell us shit. But it was interesting. So we will see what happens. I'm intrigued. Some wonderful art in this issue, by the way.
Yeah, especially I think even Coughlin posted the one panel where it shows, I don't know if it's...
Oh, where he's on the moon?
That was awesome.
Yeah. That was cool. But, yeah. So, good issue. Good issue. We'll see. I want to see where it's going. I look forward to this coming out every month because I just want to know what's going on.
Quadrant Supreme Issue 10, writer James Robinson, art by Ako, A-C-O.
They dealt with everything I'd been talking about that this book needed to deal with.
I feel like, because there's been so much of stuff, or especially all the stuff with Weird World, and then they sort of veered off with all the stuff with Dr. Spectrum and Warrior Woman and Power Princess. I feel like, what is this book trying to do? And in this one issue, they completely right the ship. They reminded me everything I liked about this series, and they put everything back on course, and we're getting the reveal of how they're going to bring back Namor.
And they also dealt with what went on with Dr. Spectrum and the issues that focused on her. They've dealt with what's going on with Hyperion and his own book and his doubts about the team. And, you know, are we doing the right thing? They did a Civil War tie-in, which, I mean, Ulysses was in the last issue, and he's the one who, you know, Warrior Woman found out that she needed Namor back alive, which she's going to do via time travel, which was not what I predicted.
You predicted Skrull.
I predicted Skrull. It was not a Skrull. They are going to time travel.
What book was that that we read that that's the way that they're explaining away somebody dying and then them being still alive? Was it Spider-Woman?
Well, they did it in...
Was it Spider-Woman or something else that we read recently where they teased...
In Squadron Supreme, they killed the original Nighthawk.
But it turned out
it was a Skrull.
There we go.
Yeah, so, yeah, so they're going to destroy this lab that has a device that creates black holes in it, and they think this is far too dangerous. And, you know, they have Blur was the point of view character at the time who's questioning, like, yeah, I'm not 100% sure about this, like, we're going to destroy a lab. And, you know, Hyperion's not sure. No one's really sure of this except Nighthawk.
Yeah,
which will become important later.
They even bring up this issue, like, Nighthawk seems to be the leader, although the one calling all the shots.
Yeah, well, yeah, they did. Here, I was gonna get to that after the thing, but yeah, let's just talk about it now. So they're all meeting together, and Nighthawk at this point has gone off to chase, Blue Marvel on his own. Which I don't know what the fuck he's gonna do. He has no superpowers, but. He's gone off to chase him on his own, didn't tell the rest of the team. He's the one who told the team that, oh, we gotta go destroy this thing, it's bad news. And Hyperion's like, when the fuck did we vote him leader? Because Blur pointed out, like, Nighthawk's the one who's kind of crazy. Like, he's very much black as white, or black as black and white as white, and if this could be bad, we have to destroy it. There's no gray area. He's the kind of nuts one.
Yeah, because when they were talking about going back to the beginning of this review, you were talking about Blur's kind of skeptical, and he brings up the fact that, yeah, Hyperion's kind of skeptical too, and even Dr. Spectrum just wanted to kill Namor. But they seem all weak to Nighthawk calling all the shots.
And they can't figure out why, and I'm thinking it might turn out that Nighthawk is doing, maybe he's like hypnotizing him or something. But you can't turn Nighthawk 100% heel because he has his own book.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're doing with that, but there's something going on there. And Nighthawk is kind of running his own show. They go to destroy this lab, and Blue Marvel flies out to fight them. Blue Marvel's, you know, A-list, and they're doubting it even more now because they're like, wait, he's a fucking superhero. If he's involved with this, it can't be that bad, right? Well, they're still going to fight him, but Blue Marvel was apparently warned of this by Ulysses that they were coming. So he had a little, I forget how they described it. He put Blur in a bubble, like a bubble it's impossible to build up friction in, so Blur couldn't run. Mm. So Blur is out of commission. Thundra, he just fucking punched her because he's Hyperion level strength. Dr. Spectrum, he used these little robot bugs that could change whatever color light she couldn't do her Green Lantern shit.
Basically.
Because of these robots. This is how they came to figure out the whole Ulysses thing, eventually when Power Princess showed up. Cause he knew too much. He would have had to have planned really far ahead to make these things happen. And Hyperion and him were going to go at it, but then they decided like, okay, he's here. This isn't going to work. We got to leave. And Blue Marvel had mentioned to him like, hey, you know, I fought another Hyperion before. And Hyperion's like, oh, really? Who won? And he's like, well, we're about to find out. And then Hyperion goes, yep, but not today. Later. And he flies away. Now, they brought up a really, really good point, and props to Robinson for bringing this up, that nobody brought up in the Civil War book. When they were debating Ulysses, I believe it was Dr. Spectrum or was it Thundra, who stated, how can there be a thing who tells the future? There's an old Wolverine on Earth now who is exactly. From a future. Cable is from a different future. And then she mentioned someone else who is from a different future. There's also Miguel, Spider-Man 2099, who's from a different future.
And the Squadron Supreme is made up of characters from other universes.
Yeah, and therefore, if you have all these people in the 616 who are from different alternate timelines, then how the fuck can someone predict the future? They can't. And I couldn't believe that in the core of the Civil War book, nobody ever brought that up.
Well, look who's writing it.
Well, yeah, but it's like Cable is on. he's on the fucking Avengers team. He was probably standing there in the issue. I'd be interested to see whose side he's on.
As long as we're talking about who's on whose side, why are the Squadron Supreme not on the Captain Marvel side, the side that
they're not on a side.
But the idea of the Squadron Supreme are going to this lab because they fear like it could make a black hole that could destroy all of reality. And Marvel working on behalf of Captain Marvel shows up.
Well, within the team, they had disagreements because what Hyperion said was he's like, okay, so we know that there are alternate futures, but if this guy can tell us things that might happen, it'll at least give us a better chance of predicting what is going to happen.
But aren't they supposed to be the proactive superheroes? Isn't that their gimmick?
Yes, so you would think they would all be for this, but they're also all from alternate dimensions. So they might understand that, you know, like when they went after Atlantis, their thinking was, okay, Nermer has attacked the land 50 fucking times, and he's still allowed to continue. There's a really fucking good chance it's going to happen again. Also, he blew up Dr. Spectrum's planet. Like, he existed as a character who had repeatedly done harm to the world and nothing had ever been done about him. He blew up a planet. They were 100% aware of that. They knew that. So in that way, they could have just been punishing him for a crime he was never punished for. But with Nermer, there's there's like a fucking 100% chance he's going to do something bad again. Because he always does. So stuff like that, like if you're 100% sure it's going to go wrong, yeah, they can go after that shit that nobody else does. I'm surprised they haven't gone after Doom.
Well, because Doom's a babyface now. But you're right. They bring up in another book, it's like, well, maybe it could have been Doom. So I guess not everybody knows that Doom's a babyface now?
Doom used to be a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Him being a good guy is a new thing. Because Tony never trusted him when I was reading his book, so we had that. No, this was a better issue. And like I said, Power Princess showed up. She's the one who told him about Ulysses. She's the one who told him, you know, Warrior Woman is at this country with this army of aliens, and she's going to try to steal Reed Richards' time machine so she can go back in time and bring Narmer back. So she's the one who told them all that and said that, you know, Warrior Woman stole her powers.
Can I say my only real criticism of this is the idea we have a rotating woman on the team? We started it off with, what, Thundera? Then we have Warrior Woman, and now we're
Well, Thundera's Power... still on the book, though.
But then eventually we're going to get Power Princess. So you've gone through three women on this title?
Yeah, but it's not like one's leaving and they bring another one in. It's just the one left, they did replace her. But it's a small team, too, so they kind of had to replace her. There's only, there's like Spectrum, Hyperion, Blur, Nighthawk. There's only five of them.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to keep adding people to the team. But the thing is, Power Princess, she's going to have to get her powers back, otherwise she's completely worthless. Like, she can't do any, like, she knows how to fight, because her Nighthawk taught her how to fight, but that's about it. She's a chick who knows how to fight. It's not really going to help them.
I just find it odd in the same week where the proper Justice League book comes out. Squadron Supreme book, I liked a lot better.
Yeah, but this was a book where it allowed for a lot of the separate plot elements to come together. And it tied into the crossover in a somewhat interesting way. So I was good at this issue. I liked it.
Okay, and to round things out with this week's comics, we have Uncanny Inhumans, issue 12, writer Charles Soule, art by Carlos Pacheco.
Okay, so they had to figure out who blew up Stark Towers, or whatever it's called, Stark Tower, before Tony came after them. And they, Medusa locks down New Attilan, which apparently they can do.
Yeah, even Karnak, he's like, doesn't this kind of make us look bad?
Like, the building just blew up and you locked our shit down. And she's like, it doesn't matter, we're going to find who did this.
But didn't they also talk about in the last issue how they actively went after Tony's stuff?
They did, but they didn't kill anyone.
Oh, okay, so the difference between what they did and
If you remember, they like destroyed his personal collection of cars. They emptied out his bank accounts. They blew up one of his houses when he wasn't there. They didn't do anything that hurt anyone. The other one, they blew up fucking Stark Towers when there were still people in it. So, yeah, that was different. But, so Lash and his group, it turns out they are being manipulated by Maximus.
Yeah.
Cause you gotta have Maximus. Maximus explained that right now, he said Maximus the Mad, when things are calm and peaceful, is Maximus the Mope. And he doesn't like it when things are peaceful. He's best when chaos reigns. He's like, and right now, all the superheroes are fighting. The fucking mutants and the Inhumans are getting ready to go to war. He's like, it's a tipping point. And what I'm really good at is I'm good at pushing things over and causing the chaos. That's what I like to do. That makes me happy. So
he's an instigator.
So he tells Lash how he can get Medusa. And what Lash did was, Lash spoke to the cameras while destroying more of Tony Stark's thing and killing more people, that he's doing this in the name of New Attilan and Queen Medusa. And then Lash revealed to Queen Medusa when she finally confronted him that I didn't do this. You did this. And then she was like, huh? And then the issue ended and I'm like, wait a minute. She didn't do this. You definitely did this. We saw it.
Mm-hmm.
You did this and like Triton helped. Turncoat motherfucker. But
well, you had to do something with Triton. It's kind of just there toward the end.
But I'm sure he'll explain. It was a good issue. And you know, Maximus is buys, so
I feel like Maximus is like the Magneto of the Inhumans. It's like they try to get other supervillains over, but they don't quite take.
They don't really have a lot of. I thought that one dude, the ex-king, the creepy one.
Yeah, they devoted a whole issue to him.
Yeah, I thought he was a really strong villain, and he was gone in one or two issues. So, yeah.
Or Lineage, he was there for a while. But then eventually they wrote him off as well.
Yeah, he's still around, I think.
Yeah, he's an advisor to Lash.
Yeah, he was a new character, though. So,
and I think it was also in this issue we got the return of my favorite Inhuman, the one that could blow her head up like a balloon.
Oh, the little girl who... yeah.
I thought they were going to do more with her because, you know, she's kind of a wacky, silly character and they haven't really brought her up until now.
Well, she's one of the bad guys.
I know, but still. It's like they could babyface her and bring her on the team. She's swacky. She could team up with Kamala.
Yeah. What's the next one?
That's it?
That was our last book?
That was our final book. Unless, I know you didn't read 4001 War Mother, so that's going to do it for this week's books.
Alright.
Alright, let's move on to our final segment, next week's books. I believe we're still using that damn song.
You're welcome, white people. White people love that shit.
They got their lighters out.
They're like, oh man, I'm gonna have to go give my wife some now.
Yeah.
Cause I just heard the damn Yankees.
Oh, we forgot to review Marvel Sum Sum. I just noticed.
I read 5 pages of it and it was shit. It wasn't written for kids, and I don't see any adult who could sit through that. So it was crap.
It was a cheap promotional tie-in considering that they have a toy line out.
Yeah. All right, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay, we're reading every book from Avatar Press.
Ooh, nice.
There are two of them. Providence number 10, which is actually coming out.
I would love it if it never comes out and they just keep teasing every week from Comic List.
Well... we'll see.
Are you sure you have the right date here?
Honestly. I'm positive because last week there was only one. This week there are like 18 variant covers. So it's definitely coming out.
Ah, okay.
I see Providence number 10. War Stories number 19.
It's been forever since we read some War Stories, dude.
Yeah, because it hasn't come out.
Well, tell Garth Ennis to get on it.
Well, he's busy. He's a busy guy. I don't know what else he's doing. I just assume he's busy.
Lazy.
Action Comics 961.
Ooh, I peeked ahead.
I want to read All-Star Batman.
As do I.
It's not Frank Miller All-Star Batman.
No, this is Snyder. It's
Scott Snyder and John Romita.
I'm excited.
But apparently every issue, it will be a, cause All-Star is not in continuity.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently every issue is going to be Scott Snyder reimagining Batman villains. So eventually he'll get to do his 27th Joker story in 4 years. So that'll be good for him.
Excellent.
And I want to read Deathstroke Rebirth.
See, that's, I'm surprised because that seems like a character.
Christopher Priest is writing it, who I like, and I've always had a soft spot for Deathstroke. Do you know why Christopher Priest said he was coming back to comics to write this book?
I have no clue.
This is not a joke. He said because the character's not black.
Ooh.
Christopher Priest is a black guy. And every time there is a book with black characters, Christopher Priest is asked to write it. And he said, the fact that somebody asked me to write a white character is why I am doing this book.
That's funny.
Which I thought was hilarious. And I also like Deathstroke, so I'm going to try that. Flash number 4.
Ooh, have you seen the cover?
No.
Take a second to look at the cover. It's cool.
Okay. There's two covers.
Look at the A.
Ooh, cover. That's a good one.
Yeah, see? I normally don't bring up the idea of, you know, the covers, but whoa, that's a cool cover.
Neat. Okay, so Flash number 4, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 2.
Can't believe you're reading a Hal Jordan book.
I like the first issue. Wonder Woman number 4.
Wonder Woman! All the world is waiting for you and the power you possess.
Are you still reading The Fix?
No, I long since given up on that book.
Okay. Ringside number 6.
Yeah! Maybe that'll bring Dave back out of retirement.
That would be a little soon, I think. he only just left. Marvel Accused number 1. It is a Civil War tie-in.
Ooh. Nothing from Image?
What? Didn't I just...
Oh, The Fix? Ringside? Okay. Sorry, I got...
Yeah, Ringside. Okay, Accused number 1. You don't read A-Force.
You want to start? You want to pick that up again?
We can try it.
Okay, let's put it on the list.
All new, all different Avengers number 13. Wait, didn't we already read that?
Is it a reprint? It may not. May be a
Civil War 2 tie-in.
There we go.
Okay, so Civil War or all new, all different Avengers 13.
I got that. All new X-Men.
All new, all different Avengers Annual.
Yes!
Fan fiction of Kamala Khan.
I didn't realize it was going to come out so soon.
Yeah, it's coming out.
Oh, God. That's going to be great. I'm already picking that as Book of the Week.
All new X-Men, number 12.
And I don't know if Vision comes out this week, but God bless Vision, but it's not going to be all new, all different Avengers Annual with fan fiction Kamala.
Amazing Spider-Man 16.
Uh-oh. I'm noticing something on our next book. Are we going to read it?
Black Panther?
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't like it, but I liked it.
Oh, that's right. Me and Dave didn't like it, that's right.
Yeah, and he's gone, so you kind of have to read it now. We cannot read Empress. Really no reason to read that book.
I'm not going to fight you on that. We got enough books as it is.
Yeah, it's fine. Scarlet Witch, number 9.
Is Old Man Logan a reprint? Let's see.
No, it's not, but I skipped it on accident.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say it after and hope that you didn't catch my mistake.
Ha!
Gotta
wake up pretty early, homie.
Yes, so Scarlet Witch number 9, Spider-Man... Do we still read Spider-Man 29
this
yet?
This is another scenario where me and Dave read it, but I think you long since given up.
Whatever, I'll pick it up.
Okay.
Vision number 10.
Ooh, this is going to be competition for Book of the Week.
Hurtling towards the last issue quickly, and then I look down, and we get to Valiant. Ninjak 18.
Not bad. Let's see what this comes out to. How many books? Ninjak. This comes out to a grand total of... I don't want that. I want this. I want numbered. And we have 21 books. So, a healthy selection, but not really anything, you know, not part of the course.
Yeah, it's not, you know, 30 books, so that's good.
Okay. So, from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, and as always, see you guys next week. Adios!
never drew a dime.